Well, the country seems to be swimming in economic recovery plans and policy documents that propose ways to rebuild an economy that was devastated by years of mismanagement and now a global pandemic. They include national treasuries towards an economic strategy for South Africa, as well as a supplementary budget, the Economic Transformation Committee of the ANC's Reconstruction, Growth and Transformation, Building a New Inclusive Economy, and Business for South Africa's A New Inclusive Economic Future for South Africa, delivering an accelerated economic recovery strategy, and it came with the tag urgent. Comparing and contrasting these with the country's national economic vision, the NDP for 2030, it is at least encouraging that both our challenges and the requisite solutions are very well understood and articulated. Where do these plans actually all converge? Where do they differ? And what are the keys to unlocking their potential? Well, to find out, let's welcome our guests, Bonang Mahale, who's now the Chancellor of the University of the Free State and a Professor of Practice in the Johannesburg Business School. He's also the author of the best-selling book, Lift As I Rise. We've also got in the Zoom room Martin Kingston, Chair of the Steering Committee of Business for South Africa. He also serves as Business Unity SA's Vice President, and his day job is as Executive Chair of Rothschild South Africa, and Dr. Miriam Altman, who's an economist and a planning commissioner at the National Planning Commission. Miriam, kick us off here. Let's start with the National Development Plan, because really that's the lodestar of plans, which is starting to see much greater reference again, which is encouraging. After a truly intensive piece of work that took time, we had highly accomplished experts, we saw the plan eventually published back in 2011, and it correctly diagnosed our 9 challenges and put forward some excellent solutions. Just remind us what the major challenges are and the overarching aim of the National Development Plan.
Well, thanks. The National Development Plan, you know, as we know, is it's really an employment plan. It's meant to deal with the trilemma of getting to full employment, poverty eradication, and greater equity in the country, and that was really the primary goal. And it sets a pathway to get from point A to point Z. You know, how do we get on a track that's better than where we were, with some targets and mobilizing the country around it. Now, you know, there are a range of documents that have come out, and, you know, people will say, well, you know, you're not saying something new, and it's so comprehensive. And, you know, the reality is it's really important for stakeholders to have a view. You know, if you want a strong civil society, the stakeholders, be it business, labor, you know, any other part of civil society, religious organizations, should have a view on what they would want to see and how it should be gone about, and not just give over to government to say, so you say this is what has to happen and we'll fall in. They should have an independent view, even on public sector delivery areas, and also on their own areas and their own areas of contribution. So I think all of these documents are absolutely welcome, and people shouldn't judge them by what's new and what's old. They should judge it by what resonates and what draws us together towards action. Now, just to come to your question, my view from the position of a national planning commissioner is, and we've been putting shoulder to the wheel, as you know, I've been on your show a few times to talk about it, is that our most critical issue, and it was identified in the plan, is about state capacity right now. It's about the capacity to act. It's about leadership. It's about governance. It's about effective financial management. And actually, the plan does lift those things up. But I think that we haven't had much conversation about it. We tend to focus on the what to do and less on who's going to do it, how it's going to be done, how accountability is going to work, how you get action. And right now, I would be more concerned with that latter group of issues than because of where we are and the disintegration of capacity in the state, and actually also in many parts of the private sector and within the trade union movement. We urgently need to be looking at how we're doing leadership development. I think Bonang, you know, writes about this as well. We have to be putting shoulder to the wheel and thinking about how to start rebuilding capacity in key sectors and in key institutions.
It's a very important departure point and starting point for this conversation, because while we do have a lot of plans, I think the key theme that runs through many of them is there's been a lack of execution and delivery. And Miriam, that speaks to a capacity deficit inside the state. Benang, as someone who has dedicated the latter part of his career certainly to really analyzing and understanding leadership, capacity building, the title of your book is Lift As I Rise, what needs to happen to ensure that we can effectively recapacitate the state from here?
Absolutely. Strategy is simply defined as how to compete. We compete at the country, at the business, but also at the individual level. What we need is a committed leadership willing to make difficult, though some unpalatable choices, focused on appropriate policies, which enable investment and this notion called an inclusive socioeconomic growth, a leadership that is able to rise above its immediate interest, because to truly act in our own interest, we must first act in the best interest of others. I think we need to have consensus, especially on the economy, by all social partners, devout of factional and ideological self-interest, and no resource contestation. We need a NEDLAC that will deliver a social and economic compact of a shared, of a compelling, of a coherent, clear, crisp, concise, and precise national vision, not just a bargaining chamber. We need to harness the pockets of excellence that are found in the public sector, together with the amazing and huge managerial capacity that is found in the private sector. We need to still urgently reach structural economic reforms and fiscal austerity. We must unlock the township title deeds on land, effectively and efficiently implement this 500 billion rand economic stimulus package that has been announced by the president. But most importantly, I think we need to charge the top state capture miscreants, eliminate the 32 billion increasing irregular, fruitless and wasteful and deal decisively with the 450 billion Eskom debt, as well as the 128 billion cumulative bailouts. If you do simple arithmetic, if the interest rate is 8% and CPI is 4%, then it means GDP must grow by 4%, because if it doesn't, then we are moving backwards. Put another way, if national population growth is 1.5%, we must grow at 1.5%, otherwise we are indeed going backwards. Why are we not auctioning off the 5G spectrum? It's beyond me, because 10 years later, we've been talking about digital migration. 5 ministers later, now we give this 5G freely to the current players. If we auction it off today, by Friday, we can bank 20 billion South African rands.
And that is, I think, at the heart of why there is still, Martin, so much cynicism when one sees yet another set of plans. And while I agree with Miriam, every stakeholder should have a view of the economy, of a future South Africa that we want to live in, we also need to start to see some execution. In the Business for South Africa's new inclusive economic future for South Africa document, you emailed it out with the subheading urgent, because it is urgent right now. Where do you see this plan of yours dovetailing or converging with what we see coming from the Economic Transformation Committee of the ANC to build that urgent consensus now?
Well, Michael, before I even answer that question, I believe that we need to understand why it's urgent. The truth of the matter is that COVID-19 has thrown into stark relief the fissures, the structural deficiencies of South Africa, not just economic, but societal deficiencies. We haven't even really started with the surge. We think that we're in the middle of it. It has yet to actually come. We're going to experience it probably for the next 2 to 3 months, and that's the current surge and peak, and there may be many subsequent ones. We're anticipating a contraction of 10% GDP this year. It's going to take us at least 3, maybe 5 years to return to pre-COVID levels of real GDP. We believe that 2 million jobs, 1 million in the formal and 1 million in the informal sector, have already been forfeited. In National Treasury's worst case, they anticipate up to 7 million jobs being lost as a consequence of COVID-19. It seems to me that we have no time to lose. We're actually in the last chance saloon, and we need to take the decisions, exactly as Bonang has said, that we failed to take. They've been facing us head-on for several years. We're all aware of what they are. There are low-hanging fruits, and we have said that it doesn't just need political courage, but it needs to have both decisive action and then subsequent implementation. The second point is we can't do it on our own. When I say we, I mean the country needs to put its collective shoulder to the wheel. Not government, not business on their own, not even organized labor and civil society. But the time for talking and debating is over. That is for sure. Confidence levels, both consumer and investor confidence levels, are at an all-time low. We're not going to be able to raise the money that is required, the capital that has to be mobilized, both domestically and internationally, if we can't project a much higher level of both confidence and conviction that we can actually resource the actions that need to be taken, which is the point that Miriam and Bonang have both made. 3.4 trillion rand, Michael, is our estimate over the next 3 years. 2.4 trillion for the public sector, including SOEs. That's not taking into consideration additional support that we hear being talked about for failing SOEs, and 1 trillion rand for the private sector. The public and the private sector are going to have to work hand in glove, and with other actors on the stage are going to have to be able to demonstrate that we can work collectively and speedily with a common purpose, which comes to the second question, and actually the one you asked. I think there's considerable common ground amongst many of these documents. The first is that we have to work together, not factionally, that we have to put narrow sectoral interests to one side. The second is that we need to harness skills, resources, and capital wheresoever they lie in a smart, effective, and impactful way. The third is, of course, that sustainable infrastructure lies at the very heart of driving inclusive growth. We've got a pipeline of projects that we haven't activated. It's beyond everybody's comprehension as to why we haven't. We need to have the courage to take decisions, as I said. We need to ensure that we can put in place the digital migration that Bonang has talked about and that Miriam has referred to, not only today, but in previous papers published by the Planning Commission. We should be auctioning the spectrum now. We should be leapfrogging in terms of technology as quickly as practically possible. If not, we're not going to be able to profile ourselves as a country which is both competitive and where it's easy to do business, particularly for small and medium-sized enterprises that should actually be the flywheel of economic activity in a way that currently they're not, because of red tape and bureaucracy that ties them down. In all of these areas, there's common cause, I have to say. There's no difference of opinion. I'm sure you'll get onto areas where there's divergence. But we better find those areas where there is common cause and immediately harness resources if we're going to avoid the real risk of taking the wrong fork in this particular road that confronts us and consigning ourselves to a life of much greater inequality, poverty, and unemployment than we've already experienced.
Well, it does seem to be that there are more things that we're converging around at the moment than we are diverging around. The one thing, Miriam, perhaps that we are clearly divergent around in South Africa is the role of the state in the economic recovery. And in the ANC economic plan, the state still plays a very central developmental role. In the Business for South Africa plan, it's more about public-private partnerships and really leveraging off the excellence that we do have, and to Bonang's point, in management in the private sector. How do we marry those two seemingly divergent ideas?
Look, there's no getting around, you know, our work on SOEs and our SOE position paper from the NPC is says maybe we need a holding company for SOEs. Maybe we do. But when you start thinking about that, you get diverted. What you actually, if you don't get committed to leadership, governance, accountability, effective financial models in the SOEs, no matter what you decide you want to do, You won't be able to concession lines. You won't be able to bring the private sector in if you don't have a proper PPP framework and the capability to draw it in. If you don't have the engineering capability in locations where infrastructure is procured by the state, at least some minimum capability, it just isn't going to happen. So this is why, you know, you can come up with all kinds of ideas about what you want to do, and we can converge. And I think we are converged mostly on the big ticket issues, but it just isn't going to happen if that capacity is not there. And that's where we are, unfortunately, in the country. We've lost so much capacity in the state around core functions, but actually equally, there's been a lot of loss of capacity in the private sector also. Mm. And I mentioned the trade union movement as well to do, you know, even just to take care of bread and butter issues. I wonder if I can just raise one very mundane issue. COVID-19 response is an anti-employment. Like, I can't think of anything that could be more attacking of any effort to create employment than COVID-19 health response in a country with 30% unemployment. I mean, that's like a fairly obvious point. The first thing that we could be coalescing around is to make sure that any workplace or transport route is compliant with COVID requirement, to the point, I can't remember, maybe it was Martin or Bernan who raised this, but that the best thing we can do right now is to prevent. And the Department of Labor's review of workplaces found, public and private, found that 50% were compliant with COVID-19 requirements. That survey went up to late June. And that included public sector. They've shut down public sector locations as well, not just private. So the ability to start building capacity with trade unions, health and safety capability, government, doing this, and business really rallying to make sure that their members and constituents, be that from transport, public sector locations, any kind of private sector activity, including informal, is really, you know, we're not going to have an economy to come back to if we don't start moving around that. Mm. And that's an example of a high-profile place where we can come together, build capacity, get some wins, work together, and do something that is absolutely essential.
I take your points, and you raise some very good points. However, I often speak to executives. Take Astral Foods, for example. I was chatting to the MD, Andy Crocker. They had an issue getting water to one of their chicken broilers in KZN. They were dealing with a local council that was entirely hollowed out of capacity. They eventually had to raise it to provincial or national level to sort things out. But it is an example of business now working with the local authority to try and sort out what is effectively a service delivery issue of water. But the collapse here is at a local government level, and that's why I think so many business people will feel despondent when we talk about public-private partnerships. They feel that they're coming with the skills and they're trying to grow businesses, which in turn create jobs and employment, but they're being met with this lack of capacity at a local government level. Benang, how do we get around that? Has this been enough of a crisis moment for the ideological scales to fall from eyes to say, well, these are the areas that now have to be fixed, or we actually go into the realm of failed state, because people are losing hope?
I think what we need to do is, how do we restore confidence? How do we extend trust? And how do we give hope? I think we must reactivate the next round of renewable energy. We have to fast-track infrastructure, public-private partnerships broadly. We need to restore the effective tax collection capacity that was lost in the 9 wasted years. We must expand the tax base, because the method doesn't add up. We can't have 18 million people on social security and 16 million people that are gainfully employed. We must clamp down hard on tax evasion. We need to reduce the deficit to zero, preferably quickly move into surplus, because in the first 10 years of this democracy, we were actually in surplus. I don't know why we are not selling some of the non-core assets. We have more than 740 SOEs and state-owned companies, and we are keeping some of them that we really are actually don't need. They are probably vanity projects like South African Airways. We must dramatically cut, if not eliminate, the red tape, and only seriously consider probably increasing the the tax rate as the absolute last resort before we kill the goose that lays the golden eggs. I think it was General George Patton who said, great wars are won by good execution, not good plans, because good execution will save even a mediocre plan. Mm-hmm. At the moment, we know for sure that South Africa is not short of resources. What we lack is our ability to execute. That's where we're coming short.
How are we addressing that gap? From your perspective, Martin, it was encouraging to see the infrastructure office and the project management office set up inside the presidency, headed by Rudy Dix and José Enzo Ramacopa on the infrastructure side, and men of integrity and skill, or all women, placed into those key positions. And one was hopeful that we're starting to address some of those key capacity bottlenecks. But still, we wait for those 55 infrastructure products that are projects that are bankable, that have been scoped. Why? I mean, that just erodes confidence further.
Well, I think that's the concern about decision-making followed by implementation that I was referring to. Many of these decisions are actually political decisions, and we need to have the conviction to take them. But I want to comment on the individuals that you've mentioned, and in fact the structures, because what we need to do is coalesce around a single set of structures for now design and implementation. As Bonang has said, there's no point in having something on paper if it can't be implemented in practice. So we are, as Business for South Africa, speaking to the presidency. We're speaking to both Kosiensi and to Rudy. They have reached out. We are talking about how we can integrate the work under the presidential job summit. As Miriam said, the job summit plans are effectively in tatters now as a consequence of COVID-19. There is no point in reinventing a wheel that no longer has application. But we need to integrate the very excellent work that has been done there. We need to leverage the work that is under the auspices of the Deputy Minister of Finance, David Msondo, his Vulindlela work, which is all about accelerated structural reform. I don't believe there's one of us on this call that doesn't recognize the need for that being addressed as an imperative. But we need to do so now. And we need to be seen by the market, and I say that domestically and internationally, to be doing it collectively and in a joint manner. What we've been able to do at Business for South Africa has been to mobilize an extraordinary amount of resource on, as I've said before on this show, a pro bono basis, people leaving their personalities and brands hopefully outside the front door. There are enormous resources that can be leveraged within the private sector, and I would argue across civil society, that needs to be centrally managed, that needs to be integrated to support, in fact, the municipalities that you're talking about that are totally broken, the provincial administrations equally so, let alone at national government level. And the problem is we don't have the time to wait. If we don't take these decisions and implement them in the next, I would argue, 3, 6, 12 months, then we will be looking at failed state status for the foreseeable future. It will take a very long time to get to the sort of surplus that Bonang was referring to emerge unless aggressively and ruthlessly and implement with absolute conviction.
Miriam, I want to end off on this issue of capacity because it really is the fulcrum. What are we doing inside that from your perspective as a member of the National Planning Commission, what are we doing from within the state to rebuild capacity? How are we trying to address this? And if we aren't, where would you like to see it being addressed with speed and urgency?
Yeah, you know, I think we've got to elevate it. We're not talking enough about it, and this is where I'm hoping that the private sector will get a little bit more forceful on the set of points. It is actually in their documents, but it's kind of at slide 80 to 100 rather than up in the front. And I would encourage the private sector in generating voice that the very good recommendations that actually are on capacity development and how we could be moving forward be brought up front, because that is where we are. If I could just take, I know you want to close, but if I could just take another example of construction, since we're talking about infrastructure. We have a decimated industry, is the first thing. We have to rebuild the capacity in the private sector if we want to implement major infrastructure projects with South African companies, which I think we probably do. And we want to use inputs. So just to take an example, the Business for South Africa, Martin, you'll see I actually have read, the Business for South Africa document on page, 85 says something like, we need a pipeline of projects so that infrastructure companies can plan around these. Otherwise, they can't build capacity, they won't do training, they won't invest in capacity, they can't provoke the kind of inputs industries that are required. I've heard that from the industry as well. It's in the NPC infrastructure paper as well. That's an example of something where when you're planning, you've got to be thinking about continuous projects. You can't just be saying this project and that project and this project. You have to get the PPP framework moving. Only 2% of public sector infrastructure projects are privately funded. So we need to get that, you know, that capacity built. Yes, there's a framework, but it's not working. Government's got to get moving on the concessioning of rail projects, as Bonang has said, the renewable procurement. You know, there are a range of major projects that really are meant to have private sector participation, but they're not being procured and getting out the door. Mm. So what we argue in the NPC infrastructure paper then, because I just think, you know, let's talk about practical nuts and bolts things. We say, look, you don't even have the engineering capability to do the project design and lead these programs. You need some minimum capability in the state to be a good client, if you see what I mean. You can't deliver a project well if you're not a good client, if you can't oversee the built environment effectively. So what our work argues is you've got to build up the capacity to procure more effectively around infrastructure, to have at least some minimum professional capability in the state, or at least that capacity on hand, so you don't have vendor-led projects, that you have the capacity to manage and that the rules around the management enable the building of large infrastructure projects, which is right now not so much the case. We're managing by exception. We're always looking for exceptions on projects. We had that problem at Telcom also when I was at Telcom. And then finally, something that I've been hammering away for ages is let's implement back to basics. COCTA has a fantastic program that is not new that says the top six in municipalities should look like X. Financial management should look like Y. The supplier list should be blacklisting Z. There are fantastic rules. If we're going to focus on, say, 57 municipalities as announced by the president in two sonas ago, let's pick even 10 top municipalities, not even 57. Like Joburg almost went into administration.
Yeah, yeah.
Tuane is always in and out.
Miriam, I've got to stop you there because we have run out of time, but I think a point very well made. Let's pick those ones that can demonstrate wins, that can demonstrate a proof of concept and start stimulating confidence, which will hopefully go some way to start rallying hope, to Benang's point earlier, that we can indeed avoid that trip to the IMF and potentially becoming a failed state. That was Dr. Miriam Altman, who is a National Planning Commissioner, Martin Kingston, Chair of the Steering Committee for Business for South Africa, and Benang Mahale, in his capacity now as a professional academic these days as Chancellor of the University of the Free State.